What does family, love, and home really mean? Coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, and welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff, because you are at the right place at the right time. I'm so excited for this edition of the show because I get to talk to a wonderful author. Her name is Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book that we're showcasing today, Finding More. It is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. I can't wait to delve into this book, so make sure you stay tuned for a great time with a phenomenal author. I do have a couple of announcements to make. As always, I want to encourage you to make sure you donate to my good friend Elizabeth Chalker, her GoFundMe page. You know, she is looking for a home safe from mold and toxins. So you go to my Facebook page and click on the GoFundMe link. You can find a way to donate as much as you can, whether it's $5 or $100, whatever you can give to help Elizabeth find a home safe from mold and toxins would be so wonderful. Thank you for what you have given. Please continue to prayerfully consider giving to this young lady. Also, I want to invite you to join us at the Southern California Christian Writers Conference going on this year at Fullerton University in California. It's from June 20th through the 22nd. I'll be there talking and showcasing our faculty members and so much more. Hope you join me. If you want to get more information, simply go to SoCalCWC.com. My newest book, An Agent for Brielle, will be releasing on Friday. I'm so excited about that. But if you want to find out what the first book was about, check out my newest release called An Agent for Ariel in the Pinkerton Matchmaker series. And I want to thank you for those of you who've gotten a copy of House of Hathaway. Very excited to bring you so many works from yours truly. It's an honor to get your feedback, whether you love it or hate it. Thank you, thank you. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to call in and weigh in, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag Right Stuff, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity, or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guest, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. You know, I'm so glad you're here with me today. This celebrates my 6th year of being the Queen of Tuesday Nights with you. I can't thank you all for your support as we have showcased many authors from all over the world. And as I said before, as God gives me grace, as long as he keeps me here, I'll be doing this until he calls me home or leads me in another direction. And I'm so excited to have the opportunity to bring you great authors from all sorts of demographics, all sorts of places, with all sorts of stories to tell. And today is no different as we chat with my guest co-host and contributor today, Allison Garcia. Allison, how are you doing today, girlfriend?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the show.
You know, I never take it lightly, and I say it all the time, but I never take it lightly to have you on the show because you could have been doing anything else, and you chose to be here with me today. So thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be here with me. I cannot wait to delve into finding a more and letting our listeners know all about your book. But what I can always do, and I say this a lot too, I can always read your bio, but it really doesn't give us an idea of who you are. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Okay, well, yes, my name is Allison K. Garcia, and I'm originally from New Jersey, and currently I live in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and I have I'm married to my husband, Julio, who's from Mexico originally, and we have our son, Miguel, who is just about to turn 4 and is just like the best kid ever. And I've been writing since I could hold a pencil. That's just been like a thing that I've always loved. And my day job is I'm also a therapist, a mental health and substance abuse therapist at a community behavioral health agency. So that's a little bit about me.
You know, working in that field, when you work with mental health patients, what are some of the things that you see that writing can do to help those types of people who have those issues? Tell us what you think about that.
I think, you know, for me, I'm a big fan of, like, journaling. So I think people can write things themselves and find healing in that, even in, like, just for themselves. And I think also, like, when I write, I like to write people that are real and authentic and have struggles. And I know that in a lot of people carry so much, you know, and I think sometimes, sometimes books or movies, you know, the people are a little bit too perfect and you can't really see yourself in those people. And so I like to portray people that are very real, have things going on, because I want people that have been through really tough times to see, okay, you know, I'm not alone, and there's other people out there that have been through this and they've gotten to the other side of it. And so that's, for me, that's one of my goals when I write. Like in my first book, my debut novel, Vivir el Dream, that we talk about PTSD, as you know, the one of the main characters, Juanita, has like a really traumatic border crossing and everything. And so it talks about her PTSD and how she struggles with that while being a Christian. You know, why hasn't God taken this away from me? And, you know, trying to figure that out. And I think that's a question a lot of people have, like, why, you know, there's that idea that, you know, you have faith and then everything's perfect. But that's not really how it works, you know. And so I think, I like to portray, you know, that you can have struggles and you can have mental health issues or different issues, and God can be there with you in that, and sometimes he can use that and can use you to help people in similar situations, and use the struggles that you have to really complete his plan really in the world. So I try to, you know, in Finding Amor, there's it talks a lot about domestic violence, and then that's a big thing, and some PTSD as well, because there's a lot of that in the undocumented community that my book talks about. So there's a lot of people have post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD or trauma in their histories, and I think that it's important to bring that into the open in the Christian field, and not just pretend that there's not trauma there, because a lot of people struggle with it.
That's very true, especially when it comes to PTSD. We're used to seeing PTSD in the same sentence as those who have gone into battle or have been in war or come from conflict. But just I think everyday life and traumatic experiences can also lead to PTSD. So it's good that you're taking on that banner of tackling these tough topics. Because a lot of people do think that once you become a Christian, everything is A-OK. And I will be the first to tell you that is not the case. If anything, you learn to cling even harder to the Lord because everything is not A-OK. Sometimes for some people it gets worse. You got like, now I believe, okay, why is all this happening to me? But he said, come that you may have life and have it more abundantly. But that's not always in material blessings. I mean, we would all love to be millionaires and just sit around, you know, drinking lattes or whatever. But we can't do that. You know, most of us have to work. You got to take care of your little Miguel. You know, I hate to say that the first thing when I heard Miguel's name, I started singing that song in my head, Maya and Miguel. I started singing that.
Oh,
that
I've only seen that a couple of times.
I just like the tune. I've never seen it. I just like the tune, you know. So I had to stop myself from humming it when you mentioned your son's name. I had to stop
myself.
You know, so you talk about how writing can be healing for some people, but for your own experience, what do you enjoy about writing?
Oh, I really like writing a lot. I feel like it's a gift that God has, like, given me from, like, since I was a kid. Not, like, in a, you know, like, bragging kind of way, but just kind of something that he's put on my heart, like, as something that I just always wanted to do. Like, I can remember being just, like, a really little kid, like, 6 years old or 7 years old and wanting to be a writer. And that's, like, one of the only things I ever wanted to be growing up. Like, that's, like, I went to college for it and everything. And later I switched my major to psychology and everything. But, you know, but still, like, God had that on my heart. And for me, like, I really like writing fiction because I like creating stories. And a lot of like, even when I was a kid, my stories were not, like, easy stories. I wrote, like, stories about kids running away from home or kids that are in, like, bad situations and different things. And that's just, I don't know, I was always, like, connected to, you know, to real, like, real people and real situations and everything. That's just always kind of, so it's like, while it's fiction, it's also, like very real and authentic. It was less authentic when I was a kid, because you don't really have a good concept of what's real and authentic when you're, like, 11. But, you know, as I've, you know, been through, like, you know, working with people with serious mental illness and substance abuse issues, I've learned a lot of different things throughout the years, you know. Just meeting people, you know, you meet people every day and sometimes things stick and you think, well, that'd be like a really cool story or, you know, that'd be really interesting to explore that. Or I wonder why, you know, they said that, or I wonder why I did that. And that's like kind of the fun part about writing is you kind of like, and I'm what they call like a pantser. Like I write by the seat of my pants. And so I kind of go in with like a vague, like character and like a storyline and like maybe like an ending. And then I like to see, like, where God takes it because, like, sometimes I'm like, I don't remember writing that. But it's just fun.
Relate to that. I can relate to that, definitely. I'm a pantser myself. I've actually tried to be a plotter. I have actually sat down and said, you know what? I'm going to do what my other author friends do. They plot their stories. They know what's going to happen. And I plotted one story, and that was 3 years ago. I have never written it because I could not write it. I knew what was going
That's
to
too
happen.
Much in your head.
And I said, I spent months working on it, and it took the enjoyment out of it. Now, I don't mind outline a little bit, like, okay, this scene will have this or this scene will have that. That's okay. But I actually plotted out every scene, every chapter, every theme, every character, never wrote it. I don't know if I ever will.
Yeah, that's okay. It's too much, yeah.
Yeah, the
one book that I really plotted, like, I don't really like either. I'm more of a vague outline kind of girl. So it's just more.
You kind of like the mystery, the adventure of finding out what's going to happen next. And so that actually leads to my next question, you know, what does your journey to writing look like? Because you mentioned your first book, which is your breakout book. You said the name very effortlessly, but I don't want to destroy it because I know I'll say something that won't sound right. So tell us what the journey to writing looks like.
Yeah. So the my first book is called Vivir el Dream. So it's V-I-V-I-R-E-L, Dream. Did you want to know a little bit about that book, or do you
Please
want
do.
To hear more about my writing
Please.
Journey?
Oh, whatever you feel like comfortable. I would love to hear about the book, but whatever you feel comfortable telling me.
All right, cool. Well, I'll talk about Vivir el Dream a little bit and then the other.
Vivir
el Dream is about an undocumented college student and her mother struggling for the American dream. So it talks about, like, how her mother came crossing across the Mexican border, U.S.-Mexican border, when Linda, who is one of the main characters, the college student, was 3 years old, fearing for their lives, really leaving a domestic violence situation, and having a very traumatic border crossing in the desert. And so it's kind of fast forwards to Linda in college, trying to figure out what to do with her life, as she is, like, applying for internships and hasn't been able to get any because she doesn't have papers. And so it talks a lot about, the fear of being undocumented and kind of what does the American dream look like, when you don't have papers, and how it's a struggle sometimes for people that are Christian and also are undocumented, because it's like, well, I want to be here and I need to take care of my family and this is a safe place, but also at the same time it's not safe and breaking the law and everything. It's just like, it's a lot. There's a lot there, I think, for people that are undocumented. So I delve into that a lot, talk about racism as well, and what people experience on a day-to-day basis, people that are undocumented, and just, it's kind of just a story of a family really, trying to live their life in this adverse condition, and people seem to like it. It's won like 5 awards so far, so I feel good about that. So it's kind of exciting.
Well, you just stepped on everything you just said. It's a hot topic right now. I mean, that is, if you want to get people talking, what you're talking about, undocumented and what's the correct term? Immigrants or undocumented?
Yeah, undocumented.
I don't want to say aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't want to say aliens.
Yeah,
first thing I think is Star Trek. So I don't want to say that.
Yeah, I think immigrants is better. Yeah.
Because if we did see a Klingon, we'd all be freaking out by now. But no, I totally resonate with that, because there are nuances to that, and I'm glad that your book touches on that. And from the reviews online, it's got rave reviews, and it has won awards. So I definitely want to encourage our listeners out there to pick up a copy of her book called Vivir el Dream, which is a story of a teen and her mom and the American dream, what it means to be undocumented. And it'll probably help facilitate the discussion, too, because so many people have such rigid understanding of what that means, and then seeing the other side of it, too. And I've always been a believer that we can have our stances, but we're not willing to dialogue. What is the point of us even talking if we can't dialogue and say, hey, here's my point. So I want to encourage you out there, pick up her copy of Vivir el Dream. It's also available on Amazon.com. So you talk about this book, but tell us about your writing journey. When did you say, I'm going to publish my first book, which is the one that won all these awards?
Okay, yeah. And is it okay? I want to go back to one thing you said there, too.
You certainly can.
You mentioned about, changing thinking. And that was like, I feel like that's one of the reasons why kind of God put these stories on my heart, because one of the reasons I started writing Vivir el Dream, I wrote it in 2012. I'll kind of combine things here, but I wrote it in 2012 because in 2011 we had a really good friend from our church got deported. We actually had 3 people deported from our church within a year. And to see somebody, a family, just like a loving, wonderful, just like a part of our brothers and sisters in Christ, to see them suffering and to see and have to go back to their country, when their whole life was here, and they, it was something that it touched me, it affected me deeply, and I'd never known anybody to get deported before, and it was one of the worst things, to have to see that, to go through all that, and I think, then when I kind of juxtapose that, I said that weird, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I look at that connected to, I'll use easier words. When I look at that connected to the way many people in the media and many Christians say, you know, well, you know, they're illegals, they need to go back, they're breaking the law, you know, this is America speaking, all the different things that people say, you know, and having conversations over and over, people like saying those things and them not realizing that was you're talking about my brother and sister in Christ there. They're talking about, you know, people. Those are families. Those are real people. And so I struggled with that a lot. And so when I wrote the book, I thought, well, you know, maybe there's a hope, you know, when I write this book, that people can see things from a different angle. Sorry, I get emotional about that, but you know, and because I know there's studies out there that say that, you know, reading fiction can actually make you more empathetic to somebody's struggle, okay, because you put yourself in their shoes when you're reading it. And I've been really amazed from both books, getting the feedback, you know, and not everybody loves it, 'cause not everybody's going to love it. But I've just I got feedback one time from a lady who was very hard set on, being very against, illegal immigration, or however she wanted to say it. And, you know, very set on it. And she said she was a, you know, a friend of my mother's, and she said she wanted my mom was like, oh, she wants to read your book. And I was like, okay. Like, I'll take her money, but she's not going to like it.
Yeah.
And
right. Mm-hmm. Thank
and
you.
So, yeah. And so she read it, and I was, my mom was like, oh, well, she really liked your book. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was so surprised. And when I talked to her, I said, yeah, I heard you read my book. And she said, yeah, you know, I never really thought about it before, about Linda's situation. You know, what do you do with the kids that come here when they're young? And that wasn't their choice. And for me, it just hit me in my heart. Like, I said, that is why I wrote this book. You know, that's mm-hmm. why God gave me this book. You know, when I said, to see her move there, to see her heart move, to see her love better, that was it for me. That was like, that if she was the only person that ever read the book, and that was the only thing it did, like that's all I needed, you know. And so for me, it's just like, that's part of my journey has been to understand like what God wants me to write, and to put it out there, and to hope that I'm hitting the mark, and I'm hoping that I'm getting to what God wants me to get to in the books.
That's the wonderful thing about when we are obedient to the calling that God gives us. He allows us to touch hearts in ways that we probably couldn't have did in any other way, and that's through the written word. And for those of you who are listening to the sound of my voice, we are talking to Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Amor, and also the award-winning book Vivir el Dream, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Allison. But if you have a question, make sure you call in at 646-668-8485. Then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions and comments. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Write Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction. Speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. We are talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Amor. But if you were listening to us before the break, you heard us talk about her award-winning book, Vivere El Dream, which talks about the journey of an undocumented teen and her mother in their quest for the American dream. It's gotten rave reviews, so make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of this book and that book and find out what all the fuss is about. And Allison, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show. I'm so glad you're here because you're giving us a different perspective of a lot of different things. That leads to my next question, and this is a question I ask off and on because a lot of people say we need diverse books. And I know your husband is of Hispanic descent, because you mentioned it earlier, his husband of Hispanic descent. Do you think the Christian publishing area needs more diverse books, even if the person is not of that same ethnicity of the book that you're talking about? For example, in the Vivere El Dream, you're talking about undocumented immigrants. But do we need more books like that? Tell me what your thoughts is. What your thoughts are, I should say.
Well, I think, yes, there needs to be so much more diversity in Christian fiction. I'm excited that there's, like, really cool authors out there, like yourself, like Tony Shiloh. Just, there's like so many, you know, I'm thinking like Piper, Julie, like
Vanessa,
Rhonda, so many, so many like really cool people. And there's actually like, there's not that many Latino Christian fiction, but there's like Cindy Flores Martinez, and just like there's several people that write Latino Christian fiction as well. And, you know, it's, I feel like there needs like to be way more because, you know, just thinking about how many Christian Latino people there are in the U.S., there's millions, you know, it's a lot,
yeah.
You know, and you know, there's a thirsty market out there for this stuff. People want to see themselves in books, you know, I think about like with my son, you know, I want him to read books that represent, you know, that have people that look like him in it, that he can feel like, oh, there's books, you know, that include me, you know, that include people like me. Because I think when we don't have books like that, it sends a message like, why are there not people like that in, why aren't there people like me represented in Christian fiction? And I think it ignores a giant body, part of the body of Christ. You know, we're, you know, every tongue, every nation, you know, it's praise God. That's one of the things it says in the Bible, you know, and there's so many people that love God, and there's so many people out there, you know, and I think even just like for me, myself, I think like as a white person, like I love reading books about people that are different than me because I like to understand what people go through, like good things, bad things. I love learning about, I've always loved cultures and learning about different things. And it's just, for me, that's just a joy I have in my heart is to learn about different cultures. Cause I feel like it makes us grow. It makes us stretch it. And God doesn't want us to be comfortable. You know, forget comfortable stuff, you know, like he wants us to be, he's pretty specific about not being comfortable, actually, several things, like spitting us out of his mouth, et cetera. So, like, you know, I think there's some specific things about that. So yeah, I think it's just so important to have diverse Christian fiction there for both people that come from diverse backgrounds and for people that are white too. And I think it's really hard to get a foot in the door in the Christian publishing market. And for me, that's very sad because I think more needs to be done in that realm.
And I think people are hearing the cry because so many people, especially within the last couple of years, they've made their voices heard. So I think it's happening. It just takes time because some people are used to viewing things a certain way. And then I've had conversations with some of my Caucasian counterparts, and they've told me, you know, I've been told if I write about a black person, Parker, then I shouldn't write about anybody else but my own thing because I'm not black. I said, I wish someone would tell me that. I wish someone would tell me that, because I would say you do not dictate what I write. And I think about when I hear something, when someone says that, that automatically makes me very upset. I say, well, how dare you tell someone what to write about? How dare you censor someone? Now, do you mandate that creativity? Of course not. You do not mandate it. Some people rather write about birds and eagles, whatever. They rather write, if you want to write about animals instead of people, that's fine. But you don't mandate the creativity. You allow that creativity to go. And that's where I draw the line at. So I couldn't imagine someone telling me, Parker, you can only write about black people. I'm like, and you know what? Oh. I'm going to pray for you because I'm not hearing that.
I think it's important to also be authentic and kind of know what you're writing, but also to have what they call sensitivity readers, is something that I had this time for finding Amor, because sometimes our unconscious biases get in, and I don't want that to happen because I want it to be authentic and real and true. But yeah, and it's just so strange, and it's scary. Like I get nervous sometimes. I think oh no, what if I didn't do it right, but so far all of my Latino friends have been like, it's good, don't worry. So I just I'm just going to listen to you and forget my own stuff.
That's why you ask questions. Right. That's why you dialogue. Yeah. That's why you open up those lines of communication, because I've written about Asian culture, I've written up American culture, about Caucasian culture, and guess what? It's not going to stop. I'm going to keep doing that because I enjoy learning about multicultural people. And so for our writers out there listening to the sound of my voice, the reason why we're mentioning this is because you may feel led to do the exact same thing. And if you want to do that, make sure you go ahead and do it. Just make sure you ask the right questions, reach out to people who know more than you do about that particular culture. So before we go back to our next question, what were you going to add to that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say, too, that, it's I'm just glad that the conversations are changing, because when I tried to get Vivir el Dream published traditionally, I brought it to this one editor at a conference one time, and she said, well, you know what, I don't think the Christian readers are going to be able to connect to her. Can you make her white instead? And I was like, oh.
So no.
And then she was like, but I'm not racist. I voted for Obama. And I was like, oh, okay. Gonna let that lie, lady. Gonna let it lie.
Sorry. Stop talking right now. Just stop.
I know. So I just was like, okay, you know what? And I got to do this on my own, And that's why I did it. I did it indie published, And I got some awesome feedback from a reader the other day. I posted that, that I published indie published so that I guess because it's very hard to get into the diverse fiction published traditionally in the Christian market. Mm-hmm. And she said, your message is too important to be watered down by commercial interests. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, okay. That's really awesome to hear. And yes, okay, thank you. So I was very excited to get that feedback from her. And so I feel like it's true. I feel like that's where God led me. And everybody has their own journey. But, I just wanted to share that.
Well, no, I'm glad you did, and that really, I did not mean to laugh as hard, so I hope I didn't blow anyone's eardrums out, but that really made me laugh.
No, it's so bad.
I'm sorry, I'll laugh again, so I'll just go to our next question that we have here. And my next question really wants to delve down into your book here, because where did the idea for Finding Amor come from? When did you go, you know what, this is going to be my next book?
Yeah. So Finding Amor, I guess just as a little background, is a story about an 8-year-old boy named Emmanuel Martinez and his mother, Ana, and Ana's boyfriend, Carlos, and also Lauren, who is almost 40-year-old Caucasian woman who goes to church and is kind of and has struggles with fertility issues, and is kind of has trouble saying no to things. So she's kind of agreed to do this after-school program, which is very hard for her to be around all those kids all the time. So that's kind of her background. And Emmanuel has been in El Salvador by himself with his grandmother and his aunt and uncle, who aunt and uncle are not super, but his grandma is really nice. His great-grandmother, he's there with her, and his mom has come to the U.S. to provide a better life for him, and has sent for him to cross over back to the U.S. And while he's crossing over the border to meet his mom for pretty much the first time, he gets caught at the border by the immigration and is brought to an immigration center. And so that's kind of how the book starts. And the very first scene of the book is him sitting on a bus. And that's actually the scene I think I might read in a little bit.
Sure.
Is the scene of him sitting on a bus on the way to the detention center, and people are protesting outside. And for me, that actually came from a real story I saw on the news. I think it was in either Arizona or California, somewhere out west. And there was a bus of Central American immigrants that were in custody going towards the immigration center. And they were all these Americans were outside protesting with flags and signs saying, go home. And when I saw that, it just broke my heart. And I thought, you know, those people have traveled like 8,000 miles, you know, on foot sometimes, on the trains, hiding for months and months and months and months and months and months to be caught at the border and to be deported back. And to get that, those people telling them, you know, that we don't want you here, we hate you, go home. And I just was picturing, what would it be like to be a child on that bus? And to feel that, and to that fear and that hate coming towards you, and so that's kind of how the original image of the story started for me, and that's the very first scene of the book,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about kind of Ana, his mother, in a domestic violence situation, but also you know because she didn't have a good start. Her mother left her to go to the U.S., but then really didn't follow up with anything like that. So she was pretty much, you know, her grandmother raised her and everything. And, you know, and she wants to do better, but she doesn't really, you know, she's worried she won't know how. It's a story about finding home, finding love, not so much a romantic love. So I don't really write a lot of romance. It's not my deal, but it's really about finding love, finding God's love, finding the love of family, and finding love for yourself.
It sounds like there's a lot going on in Finding Amor. And like you say, you didn't really do
mm-hmm.
romantic love. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'll take care of that for you.
There's a little bit. I'll say there's a little bit in there.
Yeah, but it's not the overarching thing. And I write romance, and those of you who know I love romance, I'll probably love romance till the end of time.
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably find me in a chair with a little romance book, and I'll be croaked over or something. I'm glad that you took on that, because with these very deep-seated issues in our country, having books that kind of show us the other side, the other point of view are necessary, like we said earlier on in the broadcast. But I know some people mm-hmm. are sitting there listening going, well, why did you have to come here legally? They'll say that. And so what you're doing
mm-hmm.
is giving people a glimpse of why a person may risk coming
mm-hmm.
over illegally in order to escape
mm-hmm.
a worse situation. And one thing
mm-hmm.
you mentioned that I wanted to touch on, I recently did a podcast with the Michigan Reading Association, and it's my way to help with young authors to showcase their work, but also to showcase that illiteracy is very rampant among our youth. And I was talking to the organizer of that conference on Sunday, and she said studies show that people who read fiction tend to empathize with other people because of fiction. And that's what you had just said earlier on the broadcast.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is right, that people go, oh, wow, so this can really happen. And that's where God has given you that. And hopefully if your words can change someone's heart and change someone's mind to not be so rigid or to actually see the other side of the fence, maybe that's what it's worth. So before we go any further, I would love for you to read an excerpt from Finding Amor.
Okay, well, I've got it ready here. So I'm just going to read, like, not the whole first scene because, you know, we don't have time for
read
all that.
Read whatever you're comfortable with. Read whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, so this is from Emmanuel's point of view. And this is the very beginning of the book. Emmanuel Martinez trembled beneath his ragged, dirt-stained clothing, the bus bouncing hard on the rutted gravel road combined with the increasingly angry screams in the distance did nothing to calm his nerves. He had never felt so scared and alone in his life. Weeks of traveling with strangers, following his coyote through three countries, staying in abandoned buildings, riding atop moving trains, and risking his life meant nothing now, worthless, erased, as if they'd never happened. The rest of his life, all 8 years of it, hadn't been easy, but this was by far the worst. La Migra had caught him and the other kids at the border crossing into Texas. So close to freedom, they had actually touched it. His left hand had grabbed a blade of American grass before the uniformed man picked him up and carried him away. Red-faced Americans rhythmically pumped flags and signs in the air. Their voices, filled with hatred and fire, reverberated through the thin windows of the bus where he sat on the worn seat, pieces of orangish-yellow fluff poking through holes in the green, dark green leather. The driver shifted to a lower gear and slowed down. Emmanuel twirled the wilted green strand of American grass between his index finger and thumb, trying to drown out the world around him, but it was impossible. Their voices echoed so loud he could feel them pass through his body. A window shattered. Frightened screams erupted around him. Emmanuel dropped to the floor, grabbing the little boy, Homer, across the aisle and shielding him from any more broken glass. The boy was maybe 3 or 4 years old and was sobbing uncontrollably and smelled like caca. 2 hours ago, Emmanuel had sat in a dirty, fenced-in holding cell with hundreds of other illegals. He watched La Migra rip Homer out of his mother's arms. They dragged her and other mothers and fathers into separate cages, screaming, their arms outstretched, reaching for their bawling children. Then they'd rounded up the shaking, weeping children and bust them out of their parents' lives.
Wow, that's just powerful writing there. And your words, Miss Gills, are spot on. I cannot wait till
Thank
I
you.
Grow up and can write as well. I cannot wait.
A lot of it's
well.
My editor. I'm a really good editor, so she helps.
Kind of like
you.
When we
thank
get
you.
It to the editor, we say, the dog ran. And they're like, the dog dashed across the street, you know.
Exactly.
Like, thank God for editors. I totally understand
yes,
you there,
sure.
Alyssa.
I love my editor.
I totally understand that. I like how you captured a lot of what you were saying, because we're so used to being upset. And I mean we in a general we, not we right now,
mm-hmm.
but in a general
mm-hmm.
sense, we're so used to being upset because of the illegal undocumented issue that is rampant in the U.S. But here you have another side of the story from an 8-year-old boy. And so
mm-hmm.
with Finding Amor,
yeah.
what are some of the other themes you talk about? Cause I know you talk about domestic violence. You also talk about undocumented,
mm-hmm.
Being undocumented. What are some other themes you discuss in that book?
Well, I talk a lot about, Lauren, she's kind of, one of her struggles is kind of learning. So Lauren starts out as a point, like her first scene is her watching this situation on the news
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, why, you know, she's coming from a place of being struggling with infertility. And so she thinks, you know, how could any parent ever put their kid through that? And I hear that all the time, you know, from,
mm-hmm.
you know, how could a parent ever put their child on a bus like that, or how can a child, you know, send them 8,000 miles on their own? And so part of it is her learning by meeting Emmanuel later on in the after school program, learning, you know, how that happens, you know, how, what Anna had to do why she did what she did, you know, why she had to leave, and kind of understanding that. So it kind of talks about why people come here. And so that's one of the big things is kind of her own learning journey. And that's an overarching theme it's actually a series. So this is the first book in the series, but Lauren's journey to understand, you know, first in this book, immigration. In the next book, it's more like understanding about systemic racism and how that plays out and her part in that. And also it talks about, you know, talks about infertility, her struggles with that, how hard it is for her to be around children with that. And that's something I struggled with for about 7 years. And so it's something close to home there. And, you know, it talks about God and God's love and, you know, what that means and how we show that and how, and I think, like, one of the things I like about this book is, you know, I like to stay very far away from the white savior trope. So that's not cool. So actually, like, in the book, you know, no spoilers or anything, but really, like, you know, part of Lauren's journey is, like, she realizes that, you know, she goes in trying to, like, save people, but really they've, like, saved her, you know, and so I think, like, you know, it's just, like, these unexpected, wonderful things that come to us that we're not expecting, and how we can learn from people that we would never have, you know, maybe we would never be around people, and then we're put in these circumstances, and God, you know, puts people in our lives, and we can learn wonderful things, you know, and learn and just learn from each other, and you can see yourself in other people, and then you can, but at the same time, they can be so different, and we can learn and grow, and I think that's part of some of the stuff that we talk about in the book, or I talk about in the book.
But one thing's for sure is that you're definitely touching on issues that affect us in the here and now. When you talk about domestic violence, systemic racism, and things of that nature, those are things people don't want to discuss because they are hot button issues. But as I've always said, but like I always say, always keep it open. If we don't dialogue, we don't really get anywhere. If you're just shouting, you're not listening. If you're not, if you don't do that, how can we talk about it? So that's why I'm always open to that. That's why I always said, if I were ever going to be president, it'll be like, okay, let's just all sit down for a whole month in this room. And no one leaves until we hash this out. But I would never be president. I would never do that to myself. I would never do that. But they're probably like, no, we can't talk. We have to posture. I'll be quiet before I say something I'm supposed to say. No, but I like the fact that you tuck all these big topics. I really like that. And so what I want to do is take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get some more detail about your writing process, because I always want to have other authors who are listening in to understand what that writing process looks like for each of our authors, because you may do something different than another author. So go ahead and think about that while we go to our break. And for those of you who are listening in, if you want to call in, you can. Call in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter, Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Write Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and Space Aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Specfaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J, and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today. For those of you who are just tuning in, we're talking to Allison Garcia. She's the author of the book Finding Amor, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. But why don't you go ahead and pick up her first book, award-winning Vivere El Dream, which tells the story of an undocumented teen and her mother and the quest for the American dream. One thing I've appreciated about this discussion, Allison, is that you are coming from a different perspective than one that may be prevalent among Christian circles, and I like that because you're not necessarily excusing anything, but you're talking about the intricacies and the nuances behind people's decisions, and I think a lot of people need to understand that if we're going to make policy, if we're going to set up rules and regulations, you need to understand all the nuances involved with that, and of course, the biggest thing is also to dialogue. If you don't dialogue, what do you have with people just shouting at each other that you're right and I'm wrong, or that I'm wrong and you're right. So those type of things we want to definitely talk about. So I'm so glad that you've been with us today to talk about your book, Finding Amor, your other book, Vivere El Dream, and just letting us know who you are behind the veil. So what I want to do is talk about your writing process real quickly in the time we have left. So go ahead and tell us, what does your writing process look like?
All right. Well, I mentioned before that I'm a pantser, so I write by the seat of my pants, but I do like to have, like, I usually like to go in with a little bit of information. So what I usually do, I'm a big fan of National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, and I'm actually the municipal liaison for the Shenandoah Valley area here in Virginia, and I have been for the last 5 years or so. And so for those that don't know what NaNoWriMo is, it's like collectively all over the world. It's really cool. Like thousands or hundreds of thousands of writers are all choosing to write a book on their own, write 50,000 words in 1 month. And so that's a lot of times like what all my books I pretty much have written during NaNoWriMo in the last. So what I do usually before Nano, I do a little bit of Nano prep, not a lot of Nano prep, but I will kind of have an idea of like what I might want in the story, some main characters, maybe like the climax of the book. And then sometimes I'll write down the character names that I come up with. Sometimes I'll come up with a title. And occasionally like a very loose outline. Now I'm writing I've written a couple series, one that's unpublished and one that it's the first book is Finding Amor. And so with series, you kind of have to outline a little bit better because otherwise you forget what you wrote before. And that's not helpful for the readers. They're like,
no.
Well, her eyes were green last book and then, oops, I forgot. So I try to, outline a little bit and kind of, you know, especially with the series, you need to have kind of the series arc and also the book arc, you know, so there's that. And so I write the first draft, and I just I try to lock away my inner editor. I sit down and I write all the words, as many as I can, and I try to keep very close to what it is for NaNoWriMo, which is like 2,667 words a day for 30 days, and by the end you've got a 50,000-word novel. And I do that sitting with friends and writing separately. I do that on my own, and I do that sometimes like online with friends. It's fun to have a community of writers. I think that's something that I'd never had before growing up. And I really love having a writing community. I have like probably way too many author friends, but it's awesome. I love it. So I write the first draft, and then once I let it sit for like a month, and then I go back to it and I read through it, and I kind of get my initial impressions. I laugh, I cry, I think, that's not good, or I think, like, oh, that's hilarious, I don't remember putting that in there, or like, oh, man, that's powerful, I don't remember writing that. And so I go through, and then I add in, and so I'll kind of highlight the things that I want to add in, or spots that I feel like there needs to be more scenes around a certain area. And so then I'll kind of go back in, and that's what I'm doing actually right now for the second book in the series, which is Finding Seguridad, which means safety. And I'm kind of going through and I'm writing in the additional scenes. And then I send it to my editor, and she sends me back what's called a developmental edit. And that's what my friend calls the Frankenstein edit, where the editor mm-hmm. chops up your baby and you have to sew it back together.
mm-hmm. Or your manuscript's bleeding from all the cutting up that she did. I totally understand that.
Oh, so much. Yeah, and so I really hate editing, like, a lot. But it's so much better at the end that I have to just tell myself, you know, it's really bad now, and it's so hard to edit. But, you know, at the end, you'll be holding a beautiful book in your hand, and people will like it. So, you know, so I do a lot of editing, and then I indie publish. So I have to also market my stuff myself. And I publish on what used to be CreateSpace, but now it's KDP. And I also just recently I did like a Christmas, like a Latino Christian fiction Christmas book series novella box set with some ladies. And I did a similar process except much shorter because
mm-hmm.
there was less time. So that's kind of my process, is to, you know, write fast, edit for a long amount of time, and then publish.
I like the fact that you use and utilize NaNoWriMo's guidelines, because National Novel Writing Month, a lot of authors have written their first book during that time, and it's because you do
that's the very best you can to turn off.
Yeah, and that's what you do, mm-hmm. the very best you can to turn off that inner editor, turn mm-hmm. off the negativity, turn off the critical thinking mind, and just write. For those of you who may or may mm-hmm. not know, my book, The Cure, was a NaNoWriMo book, but I didn't get 50,000. I think I like 9,000 words. And then it took me, like, I rewrote that book, I promise you, 7 times. I rewrote it. And the 8th time, I said, Lord, if I don't get it this time, Lord, then you don't want me to write it. So mm-hmm. I finally got it, and that came The Cure. And that became one of my bigger sales, actually. It was quite surprising. Mm-hmm. When that happened. But, yeah,
awesome.
But I highly encourage you to do NaNoWriMo this year. It's every November, and it's for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are against NaNoWriMo. Some people aren't. Do you. Just do you. If you get
mm-hmm.
words on the page,
okay.
after a while you'll have a book, and you'll be able to write the end. I think that's what's so important here. If people want to know you.
Well, I have my Facebook author page. It's Allison K. Garcia, author. I'm also on Instagram under the same handle, Allison K. Garcia, author. And I'm on Twitter at A The Writer. And those are my main three places. I also have a newsletter that you can find on through my Facebook page as well. There's like a link to get to that, to the landing page for that. Those are my main areas are Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and then my email newsletter that I try to write once a month, and I'm remembering again that I didn't write February. So we're talking out loud here. I was a little remiss on that.
You're like, you know what, though? March is here. You can still do it. It's okay. You can just call it my February March newsletter. There you go.
I can do
once
two
a
in
month.
March.
So, you can't do it. You know, Allison, it's been so great talking to you today. I've really enjoyed our conversation, enjoyed showcasing Finding Amor and Viva El Dream. What I want you to do in a few moments we have left is encourage authors out there, because so many have the gift to write. So many are just sitting on that gift. So I want you to encourage them to pick up the pen and write stuff.
Well, you know, yes. You know, if you have a story in you. One of my beliefs is that God gives us those things. And in the ACFW group that I'm in, American Christian Fiction Writers, the local group, one thing we always remind each other is, you know, if you are not using the gift that God gives you, you're squandering like the gifts. You know, he gave you those gifts for a reason. He wants you to use them. You're the only one with that. You're the only one that can tell the story in that way, because that's what God has given you to do. He's given you that story. He has given you those special gifts, that special perspective. And so even if you feel like, oh, this is like a story that's been told a million times, or haven't all the stories all been told in the world, you know, no, because you haven't told it. You know, you haven't told that story. And, you know, just try it. Just write it. Just get it out on the paper. Like you said, you know, it doesn't matter if you try Nano and you've only written 9,000 words. That's 9,000 more words than you ever had before on that book, you know. And just write your book. Make sure to get an editor. Don't just put it out there on KDP without editing it, please. That's not good for anybody.
Don't.
Because God gives us different gifts, and editing is not my gift.
<Mm-mm>.
Know your gifts, people. So you know, but you know, don't be afraid. God doesn't want us to be afraid. God gives us a spirit of, you know, He says, don't be afraid. Trust in me, and just, you know, trust that if you have a story in you, that's what God wants you to write.
I love how you said that, you know, trust in him, because he gives you the gift to be used. And I always use the example of the talents in the King James Version of that parable, because the one guy buried his talent, buried it. He said, I knew you weren't going to do right, so I buried it, so you can't get to it either. You look like, what in the world? You kind of go like, you know, and what did he say? Give it to the other guy who's doing something with it. Because you don't want to bury your talent. When I hear that, I think about sometimes you get discouraged as you write. Most authors get discouraged in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to keep going, because God gave you that talent for you to multiply.
Yeah.
He gave you that talent for you to use it and to spread it and make more. More of, we don't know yet, but that's why you use your talent, and whatever you do, don't squander it. Allison, thank you so much for being with us on the show today, and I cannot wait to have you back, and have you back real soon.
Oh, it's been really fun. Thank you so much for having me. I really had a wonderful time on your show today. Thank you so much.
Now, we were talking today to Allison Garcia. She is the author of the book Finding Amor, which is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. But make sure you pick up her award-winning book, Vivir el Dream, which is also available on Amazon.com. If you want to hear the other side of the undocumented issue, these are the books to pick up. Maybe you'll change your mind as well for this of picking up the pen and writing stuff. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen of Tuesday Nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at ParkerJCole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.